Thank you very much for joining us for this second seminar in this series, which is trying to explore the issues around knowledge exchange and impact in an evolving research environment, this research landscape. We're trying to draw together a number of voices from across the UK higher education sector and different constituencies related to that sector. But we're also trying to capture perspectives from the international arena, and as you'll see over the coming weeks, we'll have a couple of speakers looking at very different contexts in terms of how research is structured, organized, in terms of research policy and in terms of research assessment. We're also trying to look across the range of disciplines. The main focus is on the social sciences, but not in a vacuum, but in connection to the wider range of disciplines and fields of research. Some of the issues that we're going to be talking about today and in the weeks to come are going to be shared across the range of disciplines. Other issues will be a bit more specific to particular fields. As I said last week, for those of you who were there last week, we're trying to be quite open and flexible in terms of the range of issues that we want to address through this series. So we'll be covering issues ranging from a focus on metrics, which was the topic of last week's talk, to thinking about narrative approaches to demonstrating impact. We're looking at the REF, which is what we're going to be doing today, but also we're looking at academic identities and the everyday academic practices across the range of higher education institutions. As I said, we're looking at the UK, but also internationally. We're looking at research into academic practice, but also we're looking at research that looks more widely at evaluation systems and at critiques of different approaches to evaluation of research in the UK and elsewhere. I hope that today, as well as the rest of the series, will be another opportunity for us to engage in dialogue and critical reflection on the different issues surrounding our academic practice and the higher education organisations as they position themselves in this evolving landscape. But today, I am delighted to be welcoming back to Oxford Dr. Stephen Hill, who is Head of Research Policy at HEFCE, the Higher Education Funding Council for England. And prior to this, you are Head of Strategy at RCE UK, so a very good perspective looking at both arms of the dual funding system. Prior to this, I understand that Stephen used to be based in Oxford, working in plant physiology and biotechnology as a lecturer in that particular division. So welcome back, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that introduction and for the invitation to be here today. And it is always a pleasure to come back to Oxford. I have been back to Oxford, invited back to Oxford to give talks a couple of times, but it's the first time I've been invited back to give a rather more extended seminar, so that's not to speak to a committee, so that's that's very pleasant. As said in her introduction, my role in HEFCE is Head of Research Policy, and I'm responsible for the QR funding, which I'm sure you all know and love, and for the REF, which I'm sure you all know, at least. My responsibilities involve evaluating the REF that's just happened and also thinking about the future REF. And I'm happy to take questions and discussions about that at the end. But in my talk, I actually want to be a bit more reflective today and actually think about this topic of research impact. What does it mean and how do we go about understanding it? And I think that's an important question for both policymakers like me and for practicing researchers, because I think it's only through understanding what it is we're trying to achieve that we can actually get our strategies right and make sure we do achieve them. So what I'm going to try and answer, or at least explore in the next few minutes, is this question, what is research impact? And I really want to sort of develop an argument that says that we can look back through history and see how notions of benefit from research have developed. We can look at the sort of definitions that people like me come up with when we're asking you to do things around impact from research. That leads into the idea of sort of taxonomies of impact, and can that help us understand what we're trying to achieve and what we're trying to do. But what I want to lead on to as my prime conclusion and the bulk of my talk is that what we really need to understand is what academics actually do when they're delivering impact from their research. And I want to mostly focus on what the impact case studies from the REF tell us as a data source about that. So that will be the bulk of what I'm going to talk about today. But that's the sort of line of argument that I want to develop in the next few minutes. So, first of all, a bit of history. You know, to paraphrase Larkin, impact started in 2006. But obviously, like Larkin, it didn't start in 2006. You could argue ever since there's been research impact. Galileo had quite an impact from the research he carried out in the 1600s. But you can trace the sort of notion of there being a policy imperative towards impact down to this gentleman. This is Vannevar Bush, who was an advisor to the US president in the immediate post-war years, and wrote a very influential report called Science, the Endless Frontier. And you could argue that that is the foundation for a lot of the way in which people think about and talk about science policy today. The quote that I put up there, as long as universities are vigorous and healthy and their scientists are free to pursue the truth wherever it may lead, there will be a flow of new scientific knowledge to those who can apply it to practical problems in government, in industry, and elsewhere. And that's, you could say that's almost the same sort of rhetoric that you get from George Osborne today about why investment in research is important. Although very few people who look at these things seriously would adopt the sort of rather linear view of the process that Vannevar Bush articulates there, where basically the idea is that you just there is a process called research, and then ideas flow to other people who make something of it, either in government, industry, or elsewhere. If you want to look at more modern sort of policy statements on this type of area, I've just put two on the screen here. And these are UK policy statements. I'll tell you where they come from in a moment, but again, this is quite, I'm sure, familiar rhetoric to you. The top one talks about rigorous standards and says there's no quality between conflict between quality and relevance or appropriability. This is focused on research councils. Research councils should focus on the value of proposed research in terms of scientific excellence determiners, to take more fully into account the extent to which outcomes could be taken up by potential users, and so on. And then the second statement, the rhetoric is not that different. Research excellence is clearly primarily critical. But it then starts to talk about world-class research playing a key role in economic growth through creating new businesses, improving the performance of existing businesses, sort of economic focus, but then moves on to things like the industrial strategy and so on, the document launched in January 2013. What's interesting about these two statements is that they're quite similar. They're actually separated by quite a long period of time, in that the first one comes from the Realising Our Potential white paper that's published in 1993, and the second one comes from last year's research budget allocations. I think making the point that the impact agenda may be something that's relatively new, but the ideas behind it have been around for quite some time and are part of the fabric. And in fact, that Realising Our Potential white paper led to a change in the research councils brought charters, which actually brought delivering benefits from research to front and centre to their missions. But I said that impact began in 2006, and the reason I say that is that the impact agenda can be traced back to this report led by Peter Worre, published in 2006, report to the research councils that really galvanised the current focus on impact. And so it's really from this point of 2006 that we can start really asking the question, what is research impact? So how do we answer that question? Well, we can start looking at some definitions, because then if, say, we want a policy to incentivize something or change something, we need to have a sense of what it is we're trying to change. And the Worry Report itself had a definition of impact. I think this paragraph may be one of the single most problematic in the history of impact estimation, because it set out a very particular vision of impact. It said it's an action or an activity that has an economic impact, with economic was there in the first few words, which affects the welfare of consumers, the profits of firms, and or the revenue of government. Economic impacts range from those that are readily quantifiable in terms of greater wealth, cheaper prices, more revenue, and so on, to those less easily quantifiable, such as effects on the environment, public health, and quality of life. What's interesting there is that it's all about quantifiable. It's not that there are things that are quantifiable and things that aren't quantifiable. It's things that are readily quantifiable and less easily quantifiable. The implication behind this definition is that impact is about measuring things, about things that can be counted, about numbers. Some of the hard numbers to get, but they're still about numbers. But this definition built on a definition that still actually exists in Treasury documentation. So it's the Treasury view of impact, and it's sort of literary sleight of hand here, in that you go from economic impact, which I think we all understand pretty clearly what we mean by economic impact, that it's to do with a particular section of society, and then neatly elides into wider societal benefit, as if those two things are the same thing, just different facets of the same thing. So that's one way of looking at impact that came from that definition. That morphed into the Research Council's UK definition, which is on the screen now. I was involved in putting this together, so in some sense responsible for this, although I didn't sign it off, so someone else has got it. Impact definition here is that it's the demonstrable contribution that excellent research makes to society and the economy. Fascinating that in that first sentence, the economy is second and society is first. I think that reflects something that was a thought process that was going on within the research councils at that point about trying to broaden these definition of impact and move away from this very narrow economic focus, although it then goes on to say economic and societal impacts embrace all the extremely diverse ways social-related knowledge and skills benefit individuals, and so on. This definition, I can say, as being someone who's involved in when it emerged, was very much a compromise between the government view that was embodied in that Worry definition and a more realistic view, in my opinion, of how research actually impacts on the ground that was coming from within the research councils at the time. Another definition you can look at, of course, is the REF definition, which I think, essentially, if you look at Worry, I think that's quite a narrow definition. It gets broader, quite a lot broader, in the Research Council definition. That breadth is retained, I think, in the definition that was adopted for the REF. So impact there is defined as an effect or change or benefit to the economy, society, culture, and so on. It's a long list of potential beneficiary areas. But I always say there are only two really important words in this definition, and that's the last two, beyond academia, that the definition has actually been broadened out very, very much in the way it's written here to basically encompass any difference that research makes in the world, as long as that difference is outside of the academic sphere. So that's the progression that you've seen from Worry to through to REF, that it's about opening out and breadth of definition. I'll come back to this broad definition at the end, because I think it's the sense of the breadth of definition is what's at stake in the debates about impact. One definition that I just wanted to put out on the screen, because I think it is interesting, is one that's used by the LSE Impact blog, and was developed there from work that Patrick Dunleavy and Jan Tinkler and colleagues were doing around understanding impact in the social sciences specifically. And they use this definition of research impact as a recorded or otherwise auditable occasion of influence on academic research on another actor or organisation. That's even broader than the REF definition. That's a very broad definition, it's probably a good definition. But on the other hand, when I think from a sort of intellectual perspective. As a bureaucrat, that's a pretty useless definition for me to work out whether your case study is impact or not. And that's where the sort of intellectual definition meets the bureaucratic process is quite important. So we've had this evolution of definitions, but I think the key conclusion I draw from that is that impact, when it's defined properly, is a very broad concept. The question that I want to return to at the end is that threat justified in what we actually see when we look at what goes on in universities? Those definitions are quite difficult to work with, and so out of that have emerged taxonomies of impact that try and help sort of narrow down what it is that is actually covered by the definition. Probably the best known one and most famous one for academics in the UK at least is the RCUK Pathways to Impact definition or taxonomy, which seeks to identify a range of different ways in which impact can arise. So it has the sort of things the worry report would recognise: wealth creation, economic prosperity, and regeneration. It also includes quite different classes of activity like environmental sustainability, protection, evidence-based policy making, increasing public engagement, and so on. So it's emphasising the breadth and trying to put some structure into that rather broad definition. I think it's useful. I don't know how useful researchers find it. Tell me. Writing grant applications and trying to fill in the RCK forms, but it does give some elaboration and some structure to that very broad definition. Within the REF, the main panels were invited to produce a taxonomy of impact in their subject areas. The one on the screen at the moment is the main panel D, so that's the arts and humanities subjects taxonomy. And most of them came up with something like this that had relatively broad categories of influence. And it has to be said, even though those main panels were given the freedom to develop their own, they are all broadly similar. They're not identical, they have different words in them, but they are broadly similar in terms of their taxonomy. So you could argue that those are much more, if this was a sort of top-down taxonomy imposed by the research funder, this is a much more bottom-up type of taxonomy that comes from researchers themselves sitting on the red panel to come up with this structure and way of thinking about impact. They're actually not that different, really, if you ignore the fact that the words themselves are different, the concepts that are quite similar. If you like impact taxonomies, then the granddaddy of them all is the Australian New Zealand Research Classification Impact Taxonomy. It's called the Socioeconomic Objective List, and they have four very broad categories of impact. The fifth one, expanding knowledge, is for research that doesn't have impact, because all it's doing is expanding knowledge, and we can debate that. That category exists or not, but it's there in the taxonomy. Within each of these broad areas, they then you can drill down into quite specific. So under defence, there is only one next level, that's defence, but under economic development, there's different sorts of areas, and this drills down to a very deep level. So if you take category 82, which is plant production, primary plant products, then go down to about page 300 of the 400-page document that explains this. This taxonomy includes research, fields of research as well. Then you get down to 8201, which is forestry, and then within forestry you've got 8201.02, which is harvesting and transporting forest products. So that really is the granddaddy of impact taxonomies, and you could spend your entire research time working out which category your research impact fitted into. But I would argue that these definitions and taxonomies don't really help us understand what it is that's going on when academics generate impact from their research. So what I want to focus on for the rest of my time is what actually happens and what evidence do we have about what actually happens when research moves in. The first thing is just to mention very briefly a study on knowledge exchange activities, which some of you may be familiar with, but I think is useful background to this question. This is work carried out by Alan Hughes and Michael Kitson and colleagues at the Centre for Business Research in Cambridge. They surveyed 22, this was work done in 2007-2008, they surveyed 22,000 academics in UK higher education institutions and asked them what knowledge exchange activities they were involved in. So this is not an attempt to impose a structure, but it's merely asking people what they do and then and drawing information from that. And the bubbles on this chart tell you the percentage of respondents who reported being involved in these different types of knowledge exchange activities. I think we might upset Peter Worry and his colleagues in their report when you discover here that the commercialization activities are relatively minor. So, only 5% of the academic survey reported licensing research as being one of the ways they were involved in knowledge exchange. Only 7% reported patenting, only 4% spin out companies, and so on. Although that's not all of the economic impact that you can see here. So, there is actually much bigger percentages involved in these problem-solving activities like consultancy or research consortia with organisations outside of the university or doing some sort of contract research and so on. But there are also revealed here the importance of more people-based activities up here. So attending conferences as knowledge exchange activity is one of the most common. I'm surprised, actually, it's as low as 87%. In fact, I would imagine it would be higher. But things like student placements or participating in networks, doing things for the community, schools projects, or public exhibitions, all relatively important. And I wanted to put this up, not that I'm going to dwell on it very much more, but I think when I start talking about the REF impact case study information, I think this is a useful context to actually look back on look at that. So for the remainder of the time, I want to actually focus on the REF impact case studies and what they tell us about research impact. So I'm not going to talk about whether the REF is a good idea or a bad idea, how it works, how well it works, any of that. All I'm doing in this part of the talk is saying we have a database of 7,000 or a little under 7,000 case studies that come from the REF. And those case studies are descriptions of what actual practice is. Now, they've been through some filters, I warrant that, and I'll say in a moment that it's a tricky data set. But it is a set of information, a very broad and quite deep set of information that tells you something about how research is generating impact in UK universities. So I'm going to talk about some work that we commissioned from. Well, first of all, to say that this database is available, and what I hope I'm going to demonstrate to you in the next few minutes is that you can learn all sorts of interesting things from this database, and I'm going to scratch the surface, and this is kind of an encouragement to people in this room to start delving into this database to use it as a research resource. This database was produced for us by Digital Science, a subsidiary of Macmillan. And in addition to producing this database, we also commissioned the Policy Institute and the Digital Humanities Department at King's College London to do some analysis of the case studies. So some of what I'm going to talk about in the next few minutes is the King's College work, and other parts, and I'll try and remember to say which is which, other parts are analysis that we've done in Hefke, building on the data that they've provided, the analytical framework. But before I get into what the data tells us, I think... Hi, Glenn.
That's you. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Before I get into that, I want to just be really clear that there are some problems with this data set as a source of data to examine what's going on in universities. The first point, of course, is that the impact case studies are themselves constrained by the definition of impact that's required by the REF. As I said a few minutes ago, that's a very broad definition, so hopefully it's not been too constraining. And I do, I've got evidence in the next few slides that demonstrates, on the one hand, that it seems to be quite representative. On the other hand, there might be some problems with it. So the definition has created it's a constraint in place. So I should say rules rather than just rule. The other constraint is that the case studies were assembled to fit in with a set of rules that we and HEFCE and the other funding bodies defined as the structure of the REF. So things like how long ago the research could have happened in order for it to qualify, timing. The fact there had to be specific pieces of underpinning research was a potential constraint, might have excluded some types of impact. And also there are issues on selection of case studies within institutions. I'm sure in Oxford you just had a big pile of case studies, threw them up in the air and picked the first ones that fell down. But I'm told that in other places people actually thought about which case studies the panels would assess best and came to a view about certain types of impact being easier to assess or easier to evidence than others. And that will have also been a filter as to what's gone into this data set. So it's important to remember that. Finally, these case studies were produced for an assessment purpose. They were produced to demonstrate the quality of what was going on within universities. They weren't produced to demonstrate the things that were tried but didn't work, or got very close to generating what's an impact and then something went wrong. I was going to start this talk list with a story from my own days as a plant scientist, where we developed a technology that looked absolutely brilliant, that would revolutionise sorts of crop production, and it just didn't work once it went into the field. And I'm sure many people have got those sorts of stories where something looks like it's going to generate huge impact and it just dies at some point. That's not in here, and can't possibly be in here, because no one would put those in. So with those caveats, what can we learn of what the analysis that King's has done and our internal analysis has shown us? And this is really just, I'll start at a very high level, drill down to a few examples, as I say, just to whet your appetite for the sort of insight I think you can get from this data. So the approach that the King's team took to analysing the impact case studies was to use various text mining approaches. This slide shows you the top 600 or so words from description of impact sections from the impact case study. So there were something like 9 million words in the total data set, and 6 million when you exclude all boring words like verb or powerful. And this is the top 600. And already you can start to get some insights. The size of the word is obviously related to the frequency with which it occurs in the data set. But policy strikes you as instantly. You see that word policy in the middle. Obviously, impact is a lot of work, but policy emerges very quickly. International is important, and the impact case studies reference every country in the world, which is an extraordinary statistic in itself, demonstrating the breadth of impact. So this is the sort of core, analysing the words is the core of what they were able to do, but this is the most simple analysis that they did, just counting words, but they did some much more sophisticated approaches. So one of the things they were able to do is to categorise the impact case studies using topic modelling approach. So that's to look for clusters of words that regularly occur together. And they were able to identify, and they're across the top of this slide in text that I'm sure you can't read, and you're not meant to be able to, 60 impact topics. So these are categories of impact that have not been imposed from outside. They're not a taxonomy like I was speaking about earlier. They are an emergent property of the text that's been used to describe the impact. So there are 60 of those that they were able to identify with statistical robustness. And as you can see, and down the left-hand side here, these are the 36 units of assessment. As you can see, that there are impact topics that are particularly associated with particular disciplinary grouping. So this one here is clinical trials. So clinical trials is very much associated with the medical units of assessment, as you might expect, but that type of impact does feature in physical sciences and English language and literature, actually, as well. Social policy has one as well, and 26 has one in that subject there. So it's 70s area studies. It is actually. You're right, tourism sport. That's right. Very good. You can see there's a set here that are associated with the physical sciences, a set that are associated with the social sciences, the main panel C grouping, and a set that are associated with the arts and humanities specifically. Although in all cases, the different types of impact are spread quite well across. There are examples in all sorts of areas. And there are some impact topics, and I'll talk about these two in a moment, that are found in many units of assessment. What this demonstrates is that there is an enormous diversity in the types of impact. So, there's a huge range of things in here, from clinical trials to film and television. And those are related to, but not in a simple way, the diversity of disciplines within the units of assessment. There is some sort of face validity to this, because I'm glad you mentioned sport and terrorism, because this impact topic is an interesting one, because it really is, there's a little bit of activity in some of these units of assessment, but it's almost entirely case studies are in that assessment 26. And that impact topic has been given the name sport. It's all things related to sport, and surprise, surprise, it's almost exclusively associated with the sports science panel. So, and that's no one went out and selected that. That just emerged from the data. So I think it gives you a reasonable confidence in this. So that's the sort of diversity of impact topics. There is also a diversity. This is my favourite diagram. Also a diversity in the fields of research that have formed the underpinning research for those impact case studies. So, what this diagram attempts to illustrate is you have the 36 units of assessment here that are color-coded in the same way they were before, and these lines tell you how they link to the 60 impact topics that I've already talked about. So, diversity coming out of medical panels into the range of impact topics. What you have on this side are the fields of research from the underpinning research. We're back again to our friends the Australian New Zealand research classification, because that's the classification that's been used to identify these. But these have been identified again by text mining the description of research section in the impact case studies. So these don't come from the fact that things are, and I'll give you some examples of this in a moment, these don't come from which unit of assessment the case study was submitted to. They actually come from the description that whoever wrote the case study used to describe the underpinning research. What you can see from this is that there is enormous diversity again in the fields of research. Almost every field of research is represented, and nearly 90% of the case studies depend on research from two or more fields of research, and 60% of them depend on research from two or more of the high-level fields. So that's truly different disciplines, so from social science and physical science, for example. So this demonstrates that there's a diversity of research inputting into these impact case studies, and the importance of multi and interdisciplinary research in delivering impact. So that's the high level. Let's drill down a little more and investigate some specific questions. So remember, a few moments ago, I showed you that when academics are asked what they do in terms of knowledge exchange, only a relatively small proportion of them talk about licensing, spin-outs, and patents as ways in which they deliver impact. If you look at the impact case studies, you get the same, a very similar answer. So what this shows you is that, first of all, let's start down here, the number of case studies that mention the terms spin-out, patent, or license, and licenses And you can see that they're, as a percentage of the case studies, they are remarkably similar, in fact, to the percentage of academics that report that activity as part of their knowledge exchange activities. So the impact case studies, in this case at least, are reflecting, or quite similar to the work in which what academics describe. These impact wheels simply show you which units of assessment these impact, these case studies were found in. So perhaps not surprisingly, the majority of these case studies that mention these terms related to end-of-pipe commercialization, you might call it, are found in the main panel A, main panel B areas, with relatively small numbers in the arts and humanities and social sciences. And in fact, some of the examples in the social sciences here, when you actually go and look at those case studies, they're research into how spin-outs form, rather than case studies about spin-outs being formed. So there's a kind of lesson there as well about, you know, these types of analyses tell you certain things, but you do have to go and read the case studies to really understand them. So that's commercialization. Remember a few moments ago, the word cloud had the word policy in the middle of it. And when I start talking about the impact topics, I pointed out two impact topics that are very common across lots of different units of assessment. Those impact topics that are common are these two. One is given the name informing government policy and accounted for over 1,200 of the 7,000 impact case studies. And the other one is given the name parliamentary scrutiny, and is mostly to do with select committees, in fact. And there was just under 1,000 there. And there's relatively small overlap between these two. There's 192 case studies in common between the two categories. And so from this you conclude that the most frequent impacts coming from UK higher education were on public policy development and parliamentary debate, and that all units of assessment, okay, largely, you know, there's a big watch of social science impact here, but there is impact from all the disciplines in this area of informing government policy. So again, going back to the Worry definition of impact that all this started from, the reality is that where academic research and universities make a lot of difference is in the development and scrutiny of public policy. And just as a specific example of that, just to show you, and this is internal heavy analysis, if you look for mentions of the Foreign and Commonwealth Office, then these are the sort of impact topics that are the Foreign and Commonwealth Office is actually the most commonly referred to government department in the impact case studies. Something like 100 impact case studies talk about a mention of the Foreign and Commonwealth Office, and 70 or so have it in the corroborating evidence section. So that's very much a real collaboration with the FCO. And you can see the sort of impact topics the parliamentary scrutiny want: international development, defence and security, perhaps not surprising, Europe, foreign government policy, and so on. But some, you know, perhaps more surprising ones. The dentistry one is an anomaly. That's a miscoded case study. I haven't looked at it. It's actually about mental health in soldiers. So I understand why it's been miscoded. Dentistry is weird, actually. In this analysis, dentistry. But some of these others are a bit more surprising: literature, public engagement, nature and conservation. There's a really nice case study about turtle conservation that comes out in this search. So that gives you a sense of how researchers are working with a particular government department and what type of impact they're generating. So that's one way of looking at this data. Another way is to focus on specific units of assessment and try and understand, you know, what I'm about to do now is to focus on a specific unit of assessment and explain this diagram from the perspective of one unit of assessment, which helps you understand what this diagram is telling us. So the unit of assessment I'm focusing on is unit of assessment 29, it's English language and literature. I'm doing that one. That's one of the largest units of assessment. You can see that because of And English language and literature, a unit of assessment, has case studies that contribute to 37 of the 60 impact topics. So more than half of the types of impact that have been elucidated here are coming from English language and literature. I don't know whether I found that surprising, perhaps that reflects that I don't really know enough about as much about English language and literature research as I ought to, but I find that quite surprising. What's also surprising to me is that those case studies drew on 36 of the 157 fields of research. So they were very much, as you'll see in a moment, not just based on English language and literature, very much more diversity. So if you look at these impact topics that feature in the English unit of assessment, then you can see there's an impact topic called literature, which is not surprisingly the most common impact topic for the English unit of assessment. And things like public engagement, media, historical archives aren't particularly surprising. But there is a huge diversity down here that some of which might be surprising or perhaps not surprising. It's actually not surprising when you think about it. Crime and justice, for example, was a piece of work, I can't remember which university it is, someone may know, called the Prison Reading Group Project, that has revolutionised the way in which offenders are rehabilitated through the use of reading groups, and that emerged from some university research, and that's one of the case studies that's in that law and justice, crime and justice group. Right down the bottom here, there's things like public health and prevention, food and nutrition, quite diverse set, and you can go onto the database and find these, quite what you might consider quite unexpected types of impact that are featured in the English language and literature. What area, what fields of research underpin case studies in English? So again, the things at the top aren't particularly surprising. There's a field of research in the classification for literary studies. That's the most common type of research in the underpinning research in English, UOA, cultural studies and historical studies aren't surprising. But again, a vast range of disciplinary areas, in addition to these that are related to the English unit of assessment, have contributed. Clinical sciences at the bottom there, there's a really nice case study about the use of literature as a therapeutic tool to help certain conditions. It's a really interesting case study which you can find on the database very easily. So that's one thing you can do, which is sort of starting in the middle of this diagram and going outwards. But you can also start asking questions about the impact topics. So what I'm going to do now, keeping with the English theme, is actually look at this literature topic, and these are the words and word stems that define the literature topic, and ask the question, which unit of assessments have contributed to that impact topic and which fields of research. So again, a third of the units of assessment contribute to the literature impact topic. And 24 out of 157 fields of research. So which are the units of assessment? It's not surprising that English language and literature is the top. And this is, there is a reasonable diversity, but mostly inclusively within the arts and humanities or the social sciences, disciplines. In terms of the fields of research that contribute to the literature impact topic. Again, the big three that you saw earlier, literary studies, cultural studies, and historical studies, are the vast majority of research that delivers this literature-related impact. But some interesting other things down here, like neurosciences, which is the same case study about mental health and reading, that I mentioned a few moments ago, appears down here. Information systems, public health, and so on. So a huge diversity of disciplinary areas feeding into that impact topic literature. And finally, the other thing that you can do is to ask the question, if I focus on literary studies, which in the Australian New Zealand classification is defined as this, comparative English literature studies, literary theory, stylistics and textual analysis, you find that research in that discipline has informed or underpinned case studies in half of the units assessment, 18 out of 36 units assessment, and contributed to more than half, getting half of the impact topics. So just the same sort of analysis again. The literary studies features in English language and literature, in history, but down here in some more surprising places, including our systems, environment, and sciences. And I think we've got enough on this, so anyone wants to do that, it's on the database somewhere. So literary studies contributing to a lot of different ULAs, but perhaps more interestingly, a lot of different types of impact. So the things you might expect, media, public engagement, literature, that whole range of things like informing government policy, or crime justice, again, sports, and so on. So the message that comes from this this type of analysis is that the diversity of the way in which research brings about impact is absolutely enormous. And that's what you get just from looking at one unit of assessment and one impact topic and one field of research. The challenge of this data set really is how many different combinations of those three things there are and how much analysis there is available, how much insight there is available within that data set. I just want to point out one other area before I conclude, that is the role of public engagement in the impact case studies. Public engagement emerges as an impact topic, and this impact wheel shows you which units of assessment public engagement features in the impact case study database. It accounts for about 6% of the case studies, so it's a reasonably common impact topic, but is surprisingly, I don't think this is necessarily reflects reality, very much more common in the arts and humanities disciplines than it is in the other disciplines. And I think this is an example. So the commercialization one is really nice, it's tied up with what we know from other sources. I don't think public engagement in universities is restricted to the arts and humanities. So what I think this reflects is something about the way in which people selected case studies for the REF. So I think that distribution tells you that you do have to be cautious about some of the things you might conclude from this database. But nonetheless, you can start looking at and using this to look at the types of engagement activities that's going on. I wasn't going to put this slide in, but I'll explain why I did in a minute. This just gives you another type of analysis that you can do on this, and this is actually to ask the question which universities submitted public engagement case studies. So along the bottom here are a lot of names of universities that you can't read. The blue bars tell you the number of case studies. There's a red line here that is the 6% level, and then the red dots tell you how much above or below the 6% level each university is. So you can see there's quite a lot of diversity in that. Some, this institution here, the vast majority, it's a very large portion of case studies were public engagement, and then there are others that are much lower proportion. The reason I decided to put it in, the university here is the University of Oxford, so everyone loves a league table. So top in submitting public engagement case studies to the REF is the University of Oxford, so more than anybody else, although, and you're slightly above 6% as well, so slightly above the average. So some conclusions just to finish off. I'm not going to go into huge amounts of detail on the conclusions, but I hope what I've given you is some insight into how the impact case study database can help us understand impact and how research delivers impact. I think there are some key points that emerge from this. There is this huge diversity of impacts. Forget the narrow definition that says economic impact is all that matters. If that's what you want, if economic impact really is your priority, then probably academic research is not the place to look. But actually, there's a whole load of other types of impacts that are equally valuable, equally important, and they're all there, and they're all being generated within at least the UK higher education sector, as revealed by this database. The diversity of disciplines is really an important point that emerges from this. I'll just repeat some of the numbers that I gave you before. 87% of the case studies, nearly 90%, draw on research from more than one disciplinary area. So, you know, everyone has always said multi-interdisciplinary research is important for delivering impact. There's not actually been that much robust evidence, certainly not across all disciplines. I think we now have that evidence that, that multi-interdisciplinarity is so, so important in delivering. And we need to therefore protect and preserve the diversity of disciplines if what we care about is impact. And yeah, there are, you know, you get into conflicts about the importance of universities particularly, as opposed to research institutes, in being able to draw together and bring together diverse disciplines. I think that's a really important message. I would argue, and you may disagree with me, that what this data demonstrates is that impact is not a threat because there is so much of it, and it's so good, and it's already going on, and we now have a lot of evidence to demonstrate that from the database, the Impact Code Study database, and from other sources. But there is a threat, and the threat is an overly narrow definition of impact. The risk is that government decides that actually it doesn't like this diversity of impact. It wants this in very specific things. And that's when research agendas will be skewed, fundamental and basic research will be disrupted. All those things that people worry about, those are a consequence of a narrow definition of impact, not having to worry or think about impact in itself. And so the sort of policy message that I want to try and get across today is that the fight is about the definition and its breadth, not about whether to have a definition or not. And I think that's you know, that fight, that battle may still be a battle that needs to be fought. And just my final point, which I've made a number of times, is that I think this impact case study database is a really valuable source of research. The work that King's done, the work that we've done internally, has literally scratched the surface. There is a huge opportunity here to use this data to answer all sorts of complicated questions. In research policy, and the URL for the database, impact.ref.ac.uk, is very simple to remember, so please use it. And if you do use it, when you go onto the database the first time, you'll get invited to fill in a short questionnaire about what you're going to use it, or what you're using the database for. Please do that, because that's important for us in terms of demonstrating to government the value of all the work that's gone into producing the impact case study. So please do use the database and tell us what you're doing. And with that, I will end, and thank you for your attention. And have a second.